listeners, and welcome to the Downright Upright Show, the place to go to hear out loud and proud what Minnesotans are thinking. And I am your host, Philip Anthony. Thank you so much for joining us today. My listeners are the best. They really are. And I hope everyone is feeling fantabulous. Are you feeling fantabulous?
I am feeling fantabulous, yes.
And you know what that is? That's fantastic and fabulous. Put together twice as nice.
Right?
It saves a lot of time,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, extra fabulous. I
it's
love it.
Extra fabulous. Uh-huh. And I'm feeling very fantabulous today. You know why?
Why?
Because you're here.
Oh, that's so nice. Thank you so much.
You bet. So I'm going to introduce my special guest today. She's amazing. I mean, she is. My special guest today is Minnesota State Representative Brian Curran, who currently represents House District 36B, which comprises, now there's a whole list here, so let's just make sure I'm accurate.
Yep.
Birchwood Village. Check. Gem Lake.
Yeah.
White Bear Lake.
Yes.
Vadnais Heights. And parts of Ramsey and Washington counties. Did I hit that on? Did I miss any of them?
Yep. Half of White Bear Township.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, all right. Okay. Sorry, White Bear Township. I love you out there. and Brian is also a vice chair of the recently formed Queer Caucus.
Yes.
We're going to talk about that. That's amazing to me. I'm living in a state that has a Queer Caucus. Who would have thunk it?
I know. 15 members, too.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, we'll talk about that, too. Well, anyway, welcome, Representative Curran, to the Downright Upright Show. May I call you Brian?
Yes, please do.
Is that
please
okay?
Please do, yes.
You could call me Philip, too.
All right, I'll call you Philip. Great.
Just kidding. Anyway, on every show, the first question I always ask my guests has to do with their beginnings, so our listeners can learn about how it began for them. So, would you tell our listeners a little about your background, like where you were born, raised, went to school, and if you were writing a diary in those days that led up to today, what would be some of the entries in that diary? Like, like everything before now.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Take the ball and run with it. Dear.
Sure. Yeah. Sounds great. Well, I am a Minnesotan, born and raised. I think I can confidently say, yes, I'm the only person in my family that's a true Minnesotan from birth. My family, my parents moved from Wisconsin to White Bear Lake, where I represent now, which is a pretty neat thing.
Where were they from?
They were from the suburbs of Madison area.
Oh, that's nice there.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, so my mom was from a little town called Fitchburg. My dad was from a little town called Oregon, and they went to high school together. So,
yeah,
sweet story there. They're still together. Fantastic. They're great parents.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah. So I grew up in Centerville, Minnesota, which is the district now is 36A, and I'm on 36B. So that's really cool that my parents are now in the same Senate district that I am.
Oh, wow.
And like I said, coming full circle, when my parents moved from Wisconsin to Minnesota, they moved to White Bear Lake, and that's where I lived for the first couple of years of my life. And then now years later, I've been living in my district for the last 15-plus years. So it's really, really neat to be able to represent the community that when I was born, that's where I was, and that's where I've been for a number of years. So
you're a true representative of of your district.
Yes.
Amazing.
I have long history there, yes, and I love it.
How about any of those diary entries
from
that time? Did any interesting anecdotes you want to talk about?
Sure. I did have a diary for a short time.
You did?
I did. When I was about 15, and we'll talk about this a little bit later, too. But, yeah, so, my diary primarily dealt with feelings growing up as a queer teenager and figuring out those feelings. There's a little bit in there that I would say that led to ultimately becoming a state representative and what shaped my values and my beliefs and what I see have been the gaps, especially for, youth and queer youth coming into their authenticity. That's something I have experience with and something that I'm happy to share so that, other teens and other people in general don't have to feel maybe the pressure or some of the feelings that they might have growing up feeling different. So
was your coming out experience a seamless one, or did you have a few roadblocks in there?
There's a few. It was a little bit bumpy, but I would say in general, my sister laughs, my family, I think, kind of laughs that I had to come out at all because I was – I think they just knew as a kid that I was going to grow up and be a queer adult.
Like me.
Yeah. I mean, it's just one of those things where, you know, sometimes you just know. And so, you know, there was a lot of that. So it really was no surprise to my family. I didn't personally get the chance to tell everybody. Some folks, unfortunately, did that for me. But at the same time, my family is extremely supportive.
Oh, so, amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
I'm very,
great.
Very lucky to have such a wonderful, supportive family. All my friends are very supportive. So as far as the coming out process for me personally, although I would have preferred that I had my own narrative the whole time, it still went very well.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the reason I brought up diary is because I had one when I was young, and I threw it out. Because I was afraid, because I made some entries in there about feelings that I had for boys in the class. And I said, then I finally, like, you know, a light bulb went off over my head. If my mother finds this or my stepfather who was abusive, that would have been drama for me. So I threw it out.
Yeah.
But I wish I still had it because I would love to read the angst I was going through. The coming out experience for me was very bad. But I'm glad that yeah, thank you. I'm glad that yours wasn't. Because there are a lot of kids, even today. I mean, I can always bring up my childhood. You know, I came out in the 70s.
Yeah.
So, the early 80s, late 70s. And it was tough for me then.
Yeah.
You know, but there's kids today that are having those issues as well, which is sad because I thought we're not knuckle walking anymore, you know?
Yeah. I just last week in one of our committee hearings, you know, I was saying some things along the same lines because we had an amendment brought forward that would have discriminated against people for gender identity. And, you know, I when it was my chance to speak, I literally said, you know, where did this amendment come from? Because we're in 2024 now.
Yeah.
Where is this language coming from?
I know.
We are so far past this.
Yeah,
and when we keep having these conversations about excluding people, you know, children are listening. And trans kids, non-binary kids, queer kids are in every district across the state, whether or not their representative supports them or acknowledges their existence, they're there and listening.
Yeah,
and
say her name next, Benedict. Say
right,
her name.
Right.
Because that to me, I was so upset with that. When I heard that on the news, I was like, so in 2024, a non-binary child.
Right, a child.
In essence, a child can't go to the bathroom.
Right.
And in peace, without being their head bashed on the bathroom floor, and they say it had nothing to do with blunt trauma. Crazy,
right? Yeah, the profound ignorance in that situation. Ugh. I mean, aside from the tragedy, it's just such overt violence and toward youth, and trying to cover up there what happened is just even more damaging for other kids. You know, we need to fix this issue. We need to show kids that we're here for them and that you can be yourself and you very much should be safe in your schools, in your home, and everywhere in your community.
And the DFL is doing that. So thank you, Brian.
Yes, thank
That's
you.
Amazing
thank
what you guys are doing for our community. Mm-hmm. Amazing. Thank you. So let's we'll go back to the LGBTQ community in a bit because I want to – again, we're going through your history. It's like the biography of Breon Curran. Yeah. So through my legwork, I discovered you have a degree in criminal justice.
I do.
I found that fascinating.
Yes.
So can you what prompted you to enter that field of study?
Yeah. So I've always had a drive to serve the community. That's something that I've always wanted to do. Is something that I know that I'm supporting my neighbors.
Right.
And something that plays a very active role in that. And so years ago, I thought maybe I wanted to be, you know, an EMT, paramedic. I'm not, you know, the medical aspect of it wasn't as appealing to me as the emergency response and helping people in need. So that's sort of where I went with the public safety, the law enforcement idea. So I went to school for law enforcement. I got my 2-year degree. and joined the White Bear Lake Police Department as a police reserve, a volunteer police reserve.
Okay.
I was promoted within about a year, year and a half to a reserve sergeant. And then toward the end of my time with the department, I was a part-time 911 dispatcher there as well.
Mm.
And so I really got some great hands-on experience working right in my community with an excellent police department who's doing everything right, who puts the community first, and they're just such a wonderful, caring police department. So I'm really thankful to have that experience.
Yeah, thank you for your service,
oh,
by the
you.
Way. I mean, it's very difficult today, you know, hearing all these stories, like in Burnsville, what just happened in Burnsville.
It's
I mean,
awful.
It's those families. I still think of them, and like, you know, they just went to work and they never came home.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's sad. I also discovered, though, that you were involved in law enforcement, not only for just White Bear Lake Police Department,
mm-hmm.
but also you became a Chisago
mm-hmm.
Police Department deputy. Is that right?
Yeah. Yep.
And and it resulted, and this is a little, you know, a subject that I know people that went through PTSD that
mm-hmm.
you had to leave because of that.
I did.
Do you, if you feel comfortable, would mm-hmm. you mind addressing PTSD for those out there who know people that are going through that, and or people that are going through that?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for the question.
Yeah.
I'm very open talking about PTSD. I think it's one of the most important things we can do surrounding mental health is just to talk about it, because that reduces the stigma. And it, you know, when we talk about it, we're letting each other know that we all have some sort of struggle, and that it's okay to talk about it, and that it's healthy to talk about it. And I know personally for me over the years, because it's been about 5 years or so now, the more I talk about it, you know, that encourages growth through the process. So PTSD is still a disability that I live with, but by talking about it, by, you know, going through therapy and by doing different things, I've been able to get to a place now 5 years later where, you know, I don't feel triggers as intensely, which is, you know, a very startling thing for someone with PTSD.
Thank
where
goodness.
You might hear a sound or see something or feel something
mm-hmm.
and your body has a reaction that you sometimes can't fully control. You know, for me, it was things like, you know, something might remind me of a tragic incident and I might just get overwhelmingly sad, or I might get overwhelmingly sick to my stomach. I still deal with that a little bit. You know, we had some hearings on gun bills last week in our public safety hearing committee, our public safety committee. And there were some, you know, stories that were just so tragic and awful. And it certainly reminded me of some experiences that I went through. And I have no shame in saying that, you know, I had to get up and leave the room for about 10, 20 minutes. I was getting sick to my stomach, and it was a symptom of my PTSD. So it's, you know, it's something that I let my committee chair know and my coworkers know, that sometimes I just need to take some space and take a walk, and that's okay.
Yeah.
And I'll come back when I'm ready. And, you know, don't worry about it. I'm safe. But just know that, you know, some things are really difficult to hear, and people might have different reactions than others, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh. And to piggyback on what you said about firearms,
mm-hmm.
Especially AR-15s,
mm-hmm.
Which are outgunning some police departments, because
sure.
some of these people have, you know, like an arsenal.
Right.
You know, I mean,
right.
it's crazy. And they're worried about frozen embryos being a baby,
mm.
worrying about pro-life. I'm pro-life.
Mm-hmm.
But kids and other – and just regular adult people walking the street, going to the movies, wherever they are, they feel unsafe.
Right.
Because people – some person can just pop out and start gunning down a whole bunch of people.
Yeah, it's scary.
And what is your – is there anything we could do in Minnesota to – give people more peace of mind about being able to go to the movies without, you know, what are some of the laws that you've passed or that you're going to pass?
Yeah.
Or, Yeah.
So great question. Last session we did some work. We were able to pass a couple of really significant bills in gun reform that, you know, don't take rights away from anyone, you know, recognizing that we have a constitution. There is a constitutional right. I respect that. And I think my colleagues do
Everybody
as well.
Everybody does, yes.
But, you know, we have to take a look at reality. And the reality is that gun violence is the number one cause of death of children in the United States.
Thank you.
And there, you know, it's that's factual. The data backs it up. And there is simply no excuse for not doing anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, last year we passed a bill. Some might call it a red flag law or ERPO, but it's
What does the ERPO stand for?
It's the emergency – now you're calling me on the spot.
Oh, sorry. I don't know. Right. I never heard it. That's
but so this
That's
is
right. – I hate – what do they call those?
Acronyms. Yeah.
I was going to say anagrams. Yeah. I'm terrible at them.
Yeah. We have a lot floating around the Capitol, so it's hard for me
that.
To – yeah. But yes. No. So essentially, in a nutshell, it's, you know, if somebody is in possession of firearms and there's a strong reason to believe that they might harm themselves or others, that somebody, you know, in their family, somebody who knows them or a local police department – could petition to the court that, you know, this person's in an unsafe situation. We think that they're probably going to use their firearms in order to harm themselves or others. That goes to a judge. That goes through a court process. I believe so far in the state of Minnesota, since we passed that law in 2023, I believe there have been 18 petitions to temporarily remove guns from folks. And 14 of those petitions were granted. So there was substantial enough evidence within the court to say that, yes, we agree this person, you know, should have temporary removal of firearms for the safety of themselves and people around them. I think that is a huge win when it comes to combating gun violence in Minnesota.
Yeah, yeah. But my fear is that, you know, we're an island state.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're surrounded by, like, well, I love the people in those states. I don't
right,
want to
right.
sound like I'm, you know. But they're all, you know, everybody there walks around with guns, and mm-hmm. they're so easily accessible in the
yeah.
red states, and they just bring them into Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that's a problem.
Yeah.
You have women or anybody, for that matter, who has an order of protection out against someone.
Mm-hmm.
Those people still have guns.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why, but they shouldn't. You know, there's a whole litany of things that
right.
I'm – because my mother was abused. I was abused as a mm. child as well. I talk about it on my show a lot. And I think that if we had laws to protect women and anybody, for that matter, against people who are violent
– right.
I think we could prevent a lot of hurt and
yes.
a lot of angst and anxiety
right.
in our communities. So anyway, so I'm going to take even though we have a minute left, I'm going to for the first break, I'm going to take a break now because I want to talk a lot about your committees that
yeah.
you belong to that are really important.
Yeah, sounds good.
So this is Philip Anthony, and this is the Downright Upright Show on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. A little love in your heart. Welcome back to the Downright Upright Show. I'm your host, Philip Anthony, and I have a wonderful guest today. She's the representative of our Minnesota House who is doing amazing work.
Oh, thank you.
This is Breon Curran. She represents District 36 Bravo.
I do, yes.
Bravo.
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 I love that, yeah. So I mentioned that we were going to talk about a little bit about some of the committees
yeah.
That you serve on
mm-hmm.
Currently in the Minnesota House, and
yeah.
how many are there?
So there are a lot of committees. There are over, I think there's close to 30 if we count even, you know, commissions that are in there.
You serve on 30?
I don't serve on all of those. I serve on 4 committees.
That's still a lot.
That's a, yeah, it's a handful.
yeah,
it's
okay,
a handful.
I was gonna say, yes. And can you enumerate them?
Yeah.
Tell us what they're about?
Yep, absolutely. So I am the vice chair of the Sustainable Infrastructure Committee. And that mm-hmm. committee looks at, so we know we had some federal funding for infrastructure come through under the Biden administration over the last couple of years. So what this committee is doing is making sure that here in Minnesota we're accessing those federal dollars efficiently and effectively, because we don't want you know, we don't want to lose our opportunity to try to get some of that federal funding, because we want all that we can get, so that our state's not having to, you know, foot the entire bill for some of our infrastructure needs. So we are looking at long-term plans when it comes to sustainability in Minnesota. We want to be efficient with, of course, our finances, but also we want to be efficient when it comes to the materials that we're using to build new infrastructure, and, you know, the process that goes through, getting pollution under control, making sure we're working toward environmental justice, a lot of that stuff. So really proud of the work that we're doing in that committee, just to sort of get us to a place where we know we're using our resources the best that we can, and we're being efficient with our natural resources in that process as well.
Also, and I think we're trying to get rid of lead pipes. Is that mm-hmm. part of the infrastructure bill as well?
Yeah, yep. So that would
be... But that's going to take time.
Yeah, yeah. We've got a lot of things to work on. A lot of that falls under the Environmental Committee, but we certainly look at those aspects as an overall picture when it comes to sustainable infrastructure. Because you're right, we don't want to start using materials without, you know, knowing the full consequence of what that will be on our population.
Sure.
So as we know now, no amount of lead is a safe amount of lead, right?
Right.
And so we don't want to be going through those mistakes again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Other committees that I'm on, so I'm on Human Services Policy. This is a huge passion area of mine. So what I didn't mention earlier is that in the 20 years prior to becoming elected, I worked for a nonprofit serving adults with developmental disabilities.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Children and adults at the time. And so when I first ran for office, that was one of my priorities. It's still one of my top, I would say, three priorities, is to continue to make services accessible for people with disabilities, because there are so many barriers in our system. So really thankful to be placed on that committee. I've had a number of bills that I've introduced in the committee already this year. I did last year as well. I've got one coming up today. And just, you know, taking it, really digging into those policies to see where we can make change so that people are getting the services that they need, that they are able to live with dignity in a safe home and have staff who care and are trained well. So that's a big passion area.
You're doing the good work.
I'm
thank
trying
you.
To.
No,
yeah.
You are.
Yeah, thank
you.
You
are. Thank you again. Thank what you. Was the third? Now, I know there's one that we're going to talk about, the mm-hmm. big one that I was going to bring up later,
yeah.
but there's a third one before the fourth one.
Yeah.
So what's the third
so
one?
So the third one is the Judiciary Committee.
Oh.
So Judiciary Finance and Policy Committee. So the primary one of the primary goals or one of the primary jobs that our committee is charged with is – so in the 2023 session, that would be, you know, funding the judicial branch of the Minnesota government and how those funds are distributed. The committee itself is – I find it fascinating. It's one of those things where if you're you know, if you're kind of a nerd about laws and data practices and privacy and, you know, your right to civil action, you know, all of those things, which I am a bit of a nerd about, I find it fascinating. We have a ton of policies that go through this committee. So that one for me, it's a very active committee. We're a very busy committee, but we get a lot of great work done and a good amount of bipartisan work done in that committee as well, because ultimately it's about protecting people's information, protecting rights, and that sort of thing.
Mm. Yeah. And the fourth one is going to be the Queer Caucus, right? Is that
Your oh, no, that's not a committee. That's
oh, it's just, not a committee.
No, it's not a committee.
It's just a caucus.
It's just a caucus.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, because I thought it was a separate committee as well. Okay, no. So what was the fourth one?
Yeah, so the fourth one is public
safety.
See,
that's
safety.
Why I have a show, people. I learn.
Yes.
I'm not know-it-all. You know, I'm not the Wizard of Oz that, you know, You know, I try to sound like I'm smart, but, you know.
I think you're very smart.
Oh,
yes.
Thank you.
My fourth committee assignment is public safety. So that's where we dig into, you know, things like gun laws, criminal laws, services for domestic violence, you know, victim survivors, things like that. So some tough things that we talk about in that committee, but it is very essential, very rewarding to be on a committee, knowing that our goal is to save lives.
Yeah.
So wonderful, wonderful committee. And then we get into caucuses. So, you know, the Queer Caucus is, you know, the group of queer legislators who represent across the state of Minnesota.
How many are there?
So between the House and the Senate, we currently have 15 out queer legislators.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's a big number.
Is it including the Senate,
That
too?
Includes the Senate, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
I think I know a few, but I don't know them all.
Yeah, and we don't. So the way that we run the Queer Caucus is we don't have a published list of names. For, you know, some folks may prefer not to have that out there.
Because there's a lot of, you know, I have to say, I had a guest on who talked about book banning,
mm-hmm.
and she was against book banning,
mm-hmm.
and she was promoting school boards that were, you know, promoting freedom to read books that children want to read,
mm-hmm.
high schoolers want to read, and it's up to the parents to guide them if they want, if they think they need guidance.
Right.
But taking the book out of the library to me is ridiculous.
Oh, absolutely.
And she got threatened.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe this could be a reason why a lot of LGBT people, especially in Congress, mm-hmm. in the House and Senate, are afraid. And I understand. You know, I do. And you're out and proud. So good for you.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. My goodness gracious. I'm sure you had pushback.
Oh, of course.
Oh, my goodness. I could just imagine. But I don't want to know because I'm trying to uplift today.
Yes.
I can just imagine. You know, I'm sure people don't like me for being gay. You know, I mean, you know, I might have a show and they say I'm grooming people. You know, I don't know how because, you know.
And for what? Who knows? I'm not really
sure. If you're not
gay,
you're never going to be gay.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm telling you, it's not like, you know, a cold, you know, like walk outside and touch a gay person to become gay, you know. It's not that easy.
No, you're not going to catch it from a gay sneeze. That's not what's happening here.
What's a gay sneeze? Achoo!
Yeah. Yeah, nobody's recruiting anybody for anything. All we're doing is saying, you know, we're here as adults because we made it through as kids. Because, quite frankly, not everybody does.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tough spot to be as a queer kid. It still is today, and that's one of the priorities of our Queer Caucus is looking at policies that just make life safer for, you know, everybody. Everybody in general.
Yeah. I was going to ask you that because I like to know what the mission is of your caucus.
Yeah.
Because every caucus must have a mission.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's to protect the LGBTQ community as far as safety, availability for renting, you know, apartments.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a whole litany of things that we – I remember when I was with my ex – in New York, when we lived together, we had so much trouble trying to find an apartment.
Oh, it's awful.
Yeah.
Just awful.
Are you brothers? You know, it's like, oh, goodness gracious.
Does it matter? Why are we asking these questions?
If you're writing a book, leave my chapter out. That's what I tell people. You know,
yeah, leave my chapter out or send me the royalties, right? You can't have
Oh, goodness. Anyway, so continue with the mission. I'm sorry. I kind of interrupted because I was really excited about this whole – when I heard about you were part of it, it was amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. So Queer Caucus. So initially in 2023, we started as just on the House side primarily, and we did a lot of our work among the House members. And then over the interim, we talked with our queer partners over in the Senate and decided that we were going to make this caucus a bicameral caucus. So we are 15 strong across the House and the Senate. Our queer caucus chair is Rep. Lee Finke from St. Paul, and I have the privilege of being voted from our members as the vice chair. So we sort of we work together with our entire caucus as we, you know, lead the way and pay attention across, you know, all these bills that are coming through the House and Senate, making sure that they're queer friendly. If there are amendments coming through that we are going to need to either support or, you know, make sure they get shot down, that's a lot of the work that we do behind the scenes as well, is making sure that we've got inclusive language that's moving through everywhere at the Capitol. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just a small feat, right?
just a little thing. I wonder if Rep. Finke would want to be a guest on my show.
Oh, I think so. Probably.
Maybe you could pull some strings for
maybe,
me.
Maybe. Yeah.
We'll try that.
Yeah.
Because I, like I said, this show is in a block of four shows mm-hmm. that, are the voice of the LGBTQ
yeah.
community.
Yeah.
Because our voice is stifled.
Mm-hmm.
Everywhere you look, it's stifled.
Yeah.
They don't even want us around.
Right.
They want to hide us and put us back in the closet.
Right.
And the fact that you guys are out there loud and proud and professing who you are and being your authentic selves,
right.
That's incredible to
yeah.
me. So I'd love to get as many of those members yeah. of the caucus on here.
Absolutely.
And you could be the initiator.
Great. Yeah. Happy to do it. Yeah. Lee Finke, she is our very first openly trans legislator in the state of Minnesota.
Oh.
And I was lucky enough to be elected at the same time as she was. Yep. So we're both first-term representatives, along with Representative Leish Kozlowski. They are our first non-binary representative in the House. And then I had the revolution that I'm also non-binary during session last year. And so there
that's how you identify?
Yeah,
non-binary. Non-binary. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you for telling me because
sure.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. You know, there's this whole trans umbrella. We can have a whole show about it.
Yeah, yeah.
So there are three of us who fall under that trans umbrella. And it's just it's amazing that there are, you know, three of us in the trans community, and just incredible that there are 15 strong who are out and queer. And that, like I said, we strive to push policy that makes our communities safe for everybody and equitable for everybody.
Yeah.
'Cause if queer people aren't free, everybody's not free. If we're not liberated, then everybody's not liberated.
Breon, why don't people get that?
I'm not so sure.
Because, you know, African Americans are being marginalized.
Mm-hmm.
Native Americans are being marginalized. We're I call them the periphery committee.
Mm-hmm.
They're on the edges of society. And if we don't like each other, you know, we put ourselves
right.
in boxes, that's not going to help either.
Right.
And so
right.
that's why allies are so important.
Right.
I mean, I have to say, you know, there's a lot of people in your neck of the woods and mm-hmm. in the House who are amazing allies
yeah.
for our community.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to say one that she's a friend of mine. Love mm-hmm. her, Bianca.
Of course. I love Bianca.
Oh, Bianca.
Wonderful friend. I'm so glad that she joined our team in the House.
Oh, God. Please vote. Please vote. It's important. DFL.
Yes.
Down the line.
Yes.
Because if we keep this majority,
mm-hmm.
more things can get done.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, I'm going to piggyback on the LGBT stuff
yeah.
now, because you did something else that was incredible. And I talk about this a lot on my show because it touched me.
Mm-hmm.
Conversion therapy, when
yeah.
you pass that. As a gay man, I know people who lived in West Virginia,
mm-hmm.
friends of mine, who were in the Bible belt, I guess you would call it, and they went through it.
Yeah.
And they were beaten with Bibles.
Mm.
They told me stories of you know, that you're going to burn in hell continuously being told. If you're continuously being told that you're a sinner and you're a deviant and
mm-hmm.
you're a, like the devil personified, you're going to walk through life like that and you're going to think that's who you are.
Right.
It's
yeah.
very damaging.
Yeah, you're going to accumulate a lot of self-shame that's put
because
on from
nobody,
others.
Because nobody, Breon, chooses to be gay.
No.
No, I have, believe me, and I tell this on every show. I mean, right, Patrick? Every show we talk about it. I went through Catholic school.
Mm-hmm.
My parents were Catholic. Always in church, always praying, always. And then finally, when I was told being gay is a sin, I was like, okay, I got to try to suppress that. So I suppressed it.
Yeah.
Until finally, I said, what am I doing?
Yeah.
I'm not being who I am. I'm hurting all the girls I was dating.
Oh, sure.
Because all the girls I'm dating were, why am I not being affectionate? Or why am I not, you know, try to kiss them? Or, you know, they're starting to get paranoid. Like, what's wrong? Why is it my boyfriend warming up to me?
Yeah, and then, of course, they'll take that personally. And that's, yeah.
It's a house of cards. It starts to fall. I mean, even straight people get damaged by that.
Right. Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And so if you let people be themselves, it makes us a healthier society,
I think.
But that's just me.
Yeah.
Anyway, so thank you for that. Can you talk just briefly a little bit about conversion therapy and why, how that came about and why it's so important?
Yeah. So thankful to Rep. Athena Hollins for carrying the ban on conversion therapy for children and vulnerable adults. It was just beyond time to put that ban in place. I'm so glad that we got it done. And this is where we come back to the diary that I had as a 15-year-old. I decided that the first time that I spoke on the House floor, picked up the microphone and gave a speech, that I would read from my diary so that everybody could hear what it was like for a 15-year-old scared queer kid. And what that perspective was like. So I still have my diary. I have it with me. And I literally opened up my teenage diary and read from it on the House floor. And after I read it, then I disclosed that it was my diary. And so there were only a handful of my colleagues who knew that I was going to do this. But for the most part, the majority of the people in the room and certainly everyone watching had no idea.
What was the reaction?
That I was reading. It was
mixed.
I think overall, a lot of my colleagues on the DFL side, they were so sweet about it. They were very touched. Some had a few tears. I had some hugs afterwards, which was really nice because it's a vulnerable thing to do. But I think we need to go there. People need to see how personal this is. And it's not just about me. You know, this is me as a teenager is representative of all queer kids because, you know, most of us go through something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And so, you know, that message needs to be heard that life does get hard and that we can make it through and that we can talk about it as adults later and we can actually do something about it, like ban conversion therapy.
Thank you again for doing that. Mm-hmm. And so are you, by the way, are you running unopposed this year or primary-wise or are you the candidate?
So I'm running for re-election. There is another Democrat running against me.
Okay.
So we will see who gets the DFL endorsement.
When's the election for your seat?
So we have
primary.
There's no primary yet. So we'll go through the convention. That's on April 13th. And so folks who are delegates in our district will decide which candidate gets the DFL endorsement.
Okay. Good luck.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
And we have 2 minutes. I just want to before we take the break and go into the shift because we shift the questioning away from your personal journey. Then we talk about your opinions.
Yeah.
Love that. But if you are lucky enough and privileged enough to win, what would be the first thing on your agenda to try to work with or work on?
Yeah. So this year, I'm just getting my feet wet in the realm of preventing homelessness. And so this is something that I'm really encouraged and excited to continue working into my next term. Because like I said, I'm just getting started in this area. I've already got the knowledge and expertise in human services and public safety, and I'll continue those. Those are huge passions of mine. But now we've seen what happened in Minneapolis with Camp Nina Kossi and communities around the state and around the country. We need to do something to protect unhoused folks. And so that's my next passion area.
Affordable housing.
Affordable housing is part of that. Absolutely.
Affordable housing.
Yeah. Do you hear it? Where's that coming?
Do you like my NPR voice?
That's great. That's great.
Affordable housing. Mm-hmm. It's that simple.
Right.
Because if people are working, you know, you complain, I'm in that ranking. Then they're working and they still can't afford the apartment. I mean, come on, make up your mind. What do you want these people to do?
Right.
Anyway, so we're going to take a quick break.
Great.
Again, and we're going to come back with the shift.
Ooh.
And I'll tell you what that is. Well, it's about your opinions, but we'll elaborate more on it after these messages. And my name is Philip Anthony. I'm the host of the Downright Upright Show on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Yay, Minnesota! Woo. Back to the Downright Upright Show. This is Philip Anthony, your host, and that is my song.
I love it.
I love the message. Come on, people, now smile on your brother.
That's
everybody,
right.
Get together. Try to love one another right now.
Right now.
You couldn't encapsulate a message better than that song.
I love it.
The words are great. So now we have come to the part of the show I like to call the shift, where we shift the questioning away from your personal journey as a House of Representative, Minnesota House member, and to your opinions.
All right.
And don't forget to say the F in shift, because then we have a problem.
Sure.
You have to say shift.
Shift.
Yeah, because if you don't make that F sound, it's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I just hot off the presses, I just got this.
Ooh.
So I have to bring it up. The U.S. Supreme Court restored Republican frontrunner Trump. Mm. I said his name. On the Colorado primary ballot ruling, the state lacked authority to disqualify him after his actions 3 years ago on his siege of the U.S. Capitol. What are your thoughts about that?
You know, my thoughts are I don't agree with that decision. I don't think that was the
right
decision.
What about states' rights? They were so into states' rights. The state made a decision.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, that the state should have been able to make that decision, as should all states. And I think, you know, based on what we know, and we were all able to watch this unfold live on TV, we were shown evidence, we heard testimony from what happened. We're well aware of the details and who orchestrated the insurrection. And it's very clear that Donald Trump was behind it, knew what was happening, had people involved helping him.
Yes.
And he did nothing to stop it, which in itself is terrible.
He was sitting in, supposedly from the reports, while this was all going on, sitting in a room watching television.
Yeah.
Did absolutely nothing. You see your country's literally almost falling apart, and you're just sitting there on your laurels and doing nothing.
Yeah, encouraging people to, you know, go and essentially take over the Capitol. I mean, to me, those are blatant acts. Those are blatant acts
against
our government. There
is no excuse.
Could
you imagine if Joe Biden did that?
Oh, I know.
They'd be like, they'd be, I don't even know what they'd be doing.
I don't know.
I have no words.
Yeah, I mean,
they would be livid.
Uh-huh.
I guess that's a good word, right? And I would ask my listeners, please, to take out your pocket constitution and read the 14th Amendment.
Right.
And you tell me what you think.
Right. Yeah,
that's all
absolutely.
I have to say.
Yep.
Read the 14th Amendment.
Read it.
Okay, so now piggybacking on the Supreme Court, they have decided they would take up the ex-president's immunity claim now on top of that, and bolstering his delay strategy in the process. What are your thoughts about that? Everybody has a right to a speedy trial.
Sure.
Now, if you think you're innocent, I would want that thing done ASAP.
Oh, of course.
But he seems to be, you know, delaying everything because he thinks he's going to win.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he wins, they'll drop all of these charges against him. So he literally, you know, commits all the crimes he wants and he can get away with it.
Yeah. I think this is just another example in the long history of, you know, shady things that Donald Trump is responsible for, where, you know, he doesn't take accountability for what he's involved in, even if he is the one who gives direction to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he consistently tries to delay the process in whatever that process is. And we know not just delaying court processes that he's involved in, but delaying payment to places and people that he owes money to.
He never paid anybody.
Right, exactly. And so this is just another thing that Donald Trump does.
University.
I mean, just walk through life without consequences and delay everything until maybe you're just not around to deal with it anymore and then you never face consequences. That is a type of privilege to me that is absolutely disgusting. I don't know a single average person in America who walks through life with that level of ignorance and privilege. How can you be a representative of America when nobody else is like you? He's representing himself. Nobody I know is like that.
Exactly.
It's very self-serving.
And I think personally, in my opinion, and I can throw the ball back to you, in my opinion, I think the American people deserve to know if he's an insurrectionist or not.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because if they find him guilty in court, I don't think I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know if some of them are so into the cult it may not even matter to them. But quite a few that are Trumpians, but they're on the periphery. You know, they could be swayed. Maybe, maybe some of them would say, you know what, if he's guilty of insurrection, I don't want to vote for him.
Right.
And so Americans deserve to know what the result of that trial would be.
Yeah.
And by delaying, and then there's the documents case down in Florida.
Right.
You have the judge there who's handpicked by Trump, who she's another delay lady. You can't do this. You have to – the people need to know.
Right.
Am I saying it right?
Yes. I completely agree with you. This is something that, you know, as the top elected official in the United States of America, which, you know, obviously very powerful country in the world, we would not tolerate this happening in another country. And watching a world leader assert such control and dominance and authoritarian vibes where it's not mistakable. We know he's said things that, you know, about wanting to be president forever. If he could, he would, sort of thing.
That's why he admires the dictators around the world. He doesn't.
Right.
You don't see him kissing up to, the prime minister of Kumar. What's his name of UK? Is his name Kumar? I think
I'm
so.
I'm not sure.
Here's what I reach out to Patrick.
Yeah.
Who's the prime minister of the UK?
Rishi Sunak.
Sunak.
There we go.
Oh, my God. Thank you, Patrick.
Yeah.
Matt, could you – yeah. I mean, we need to know.
We need to know. And like I said, we would not stand for this happening in any other country. If we saw this on our world news, we would think, what the heck are they doing? Why is this guy, you know – at that point, why is this guy still in leadership? Why are they still letting him do this job?
Yeah.
And then afterward, why isn't this guy locked up? Or why is he not facing any consequences for what he did?
He never seems to, right?
Never seems to. And so that's a real
issue.
But
he was found guilty in the rape trial, although it was a civil trial, so he wasn't put in jail for that.
Right.
But he was I think he was sued for a lot, $83 million or something, some crazy number like that. So even at the very least, you know that he's a sexual predator.
Exactly.
Why in goodness gracious name would you ever vote for someone like that?
Right. And very overtly, you know, leaned into the fact that he was somebody who sexually assaulted people and was proud of it before he even became president, and people still voted for him.
Yeah.
So,
well, we have 2 minutes. I'm going to do – let's do a lightning round. I'm just going to say Senator Mitch McConnell stepped down, and your one-word answer is
– finally.
Finally, it happened to him. Yeah. Anyway, yeah, good. And then another lightning round question. What are your thoughts about the Alabama Supreme Court ending in vitro fertilization by designating embryos as babies? Your answer?
That's not science.
No.
That's not how this works.
No, try burping some embryos, you know.
That's not how this works.
Hey, quiet out there. Have some embryos running down the hallway. You know. Sugar. Anyway, unfortunately, we've come to the end of the show.
Sure.
Beyond. Oh, my God, it was amazing having
you.
So
good to talk to you.
We
got to
do this again sometime.
Yeah, I would love to.
Yeah, and I'm wishing you all the luck in the world. You're an amazing person.
Thank you.
You're doing amazing work.
Thank you.
You know, I don't – look – I don't care if you're black, if you're LGBT, if you're Native, if you're doing the people's work, mm-hmm. you're my kind of person.
Yeah,
you
me
know,
too.
That's all I care about, you know, and you're representing. So thank you, and I appreciate you. So for more info about Representative Breonne Curran, you can follow her at BreonneCurran.com or on Twitter or X. I call it Twitter still, at Breonne Curran. C-U-R-R-A-N. And thank you again for coming on the Downright Upright Show. And to my listeners, thank you for joining us. I love you so much. Thank you for your clicks, for listening every Saturday at 5 p.m. on AM 950. And thank you to Patrick, my producer.
Who is, thank you, Patrick.
Isn't Patrick amazing? I mean, he's like my encyclopedia. Anyway, love you all. Bye.
Thank you all so much.
Bye. Bye.